This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the show, everybody. We have reached episode 225, so let's all do a little happy dance. No one else is happy dancing? Oh, there we go. Every 25 episodes, we dedicate the show to asking a panel of our coaches questions from you, the athletes in our audience. I've got three incredible TriDot coaches here to help us out. Pro triathlete and TriDot coach Elizabeth James. I have TriDot coach, TriDot business coach, and Coach Connect advisor Ryan Tibble. And we also have with us TriDot coach and staff member Joanna Namey. There is so much knowledge on this panel. I am pumped to ask them your questions. EJ, Joe, Ryan, thank you so much for joining me on episode 225.
Vanessa, it is so good to be here. I can't believe we're already at 225. It's been an amazing few years. Really excited for another episode that is dedicated to our listener questions.
Yes, Vanessa, thanks so much for having me. I'm super psyched to be here with three of my fave people. So this should be an awesome episode.
Yeah. You know what, Vanessa, I am still happy dancing, so excited to be here to assist our listeners in their triathlon journey as a 225, unbelievable. So thank you, Vanessa.
I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
In honor of Ask Your Questions episode, I thought it would be perfect if we used a warm-up question that was actually submitted from one of our TriDot athletes. Thanks goes out to TriDot ambassador Emily Cloughley for this one. The question is, what is something you do during a race that you wouldn't do otherwise? Ryan, let's go to you first.
Oh, no. All right. can I plead the fifth on this one? You're going to make me go first because, honestly, I'm probably the absolute worst with all you ladies here. I mean, I know I've heard it before. Guys just gross people out. I'm just going to leave it right here and just say, let's just say my racing shoes are not allowed in my house. And Monica just won't allow it. I'm going to stop right there.
I love it, Ryan.
We have to infer what that means. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love it, Ryan. I challenge you. I think women are as gross on the Ironman course as men, and pleading the fifth. My sister will ask me, did you use the porta potties? And I'm like, I didn't visit a restroom for 12 hours. So then you can assume what's occurring on the race course. Or if you do have to use a porta potty, I think about to years where I was eating a gel in a porta potty.
Oh, no.
I mean, that's something in my daily life, but there becomes circumstances where it's emergency and you're multitasking.
Best use of time. I agree.
Man, I tell you what, Emily just really kind of opened up a box of worms here. This could be an interesting response, not only from us, but from the audience as well. I think in general, just when you're racing, all cleanliness rules go out the window. And I think there are quite a few things that I do in racing that you would never find me doing otherwise. I'd like to think that for the most part, my personal hygiene habits are pretty good. But, let's think about eating food from our hands that were covered in lake water and then sweat and grabbing that food from an aid station that somebody else that probably used the porta potty and didn't wash their hands afterwards also touched. Like, this is just like kind of grossing me out right now too. Like, ugh. But
Not me.
Gross. Fine. Plenty of things that I think we all do racing that we would not in our daily lives. And we wonder why a number of us get sick after racing, huh?
I'm taking this question in a totally different direction. Mine has nothing to do with cleanliness, but I can assure you that wearing a spandex onesie is not something that I do on a regular basis, but I don't know. Maybe
really,
I should start.
Really, Vanessa? Yeah. We just got to put that in your daily life now.
Right. Well, do you dare me to wear my race kit somewhere random and see what people's reactions are?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fashion, Vanessa.
It's fashion. Maybe I'll do. I think I might have to wait for the current minus 47 degrees Celsius cold snap to stop before I wear a onesie. Spandex.
Well, then you just wear your wetsuit wherever you go.
Bingo. All right. Pick your kids up in your wetsuit.
I could do that. Okay, I'm going to give it a try, actually. See how it holds up in the cold weather. Let's throw this one out to the people. Make sure you are a part of the I Am Tridot Facebook group and put your answers in the comments of the warm-up question post. And according to how this went with our fabulous coaches here, I am really looking forward to reading all of your answers.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Tridot Pool School is the best way for triathletes to learn proper swim form, and it's now the official swim program of Ironman. The Tridot coaching team spent years on the pool deck crafting functional freestyle, and it has already helped hundreds of triathletes improve their swim by an average of 12%. As soon as an athlete registers for Tridot Pool School, they are given access to the Tridot Academy, where a series of dry-land exercises help build crucial muscle memory long before the in-person weekend. The weekend workshop is an engaging blend of instruction, demonstrations, and drills with frequent breaks to rest and reflect. You'll be grouped with swimmers of similar ability and taught step-by-step how to turn your muscle memory into full-stroke swimming that's smooth and fast. Tridot Pool School is for everyone. We've had entry-level triathletes, back-of-the-packers, mid-packers, some elite age groupers, and even a couple pro triathletes. Ready to jump in? There are pool schools available all over the country and around the world. Head to tridot.com/pool-school and sign up today. Real questions from real Tridot athletes. Let's get to these questions. Athlete question number one here on episode 225 comes from Patrick Masato. Patrick asks, swim workouts are primarily freestyle. Does that make us more prone to swimmers' shoulders? I've been having pain in a certain area, and my chiropractor suggested adding backstroke to see if that helps.
Yeah, I'll take that one. That's definitely true. As triathletes, we'll look at our workouts and primarily or solely it's freestyle that we are swimming, which greatly affects our posture, as well as, the positions we hold on a bike. As far as riding in aero, we're very closed off. There isn't any chest opening, and that can cause some serious pain in the upper lower back. It affects shoulder mobility. It affects our overall posture. So for those of my athletes that can do backstroke, it is something that I do incorporate into their training, varying the strokes, breaststroke. I'm not going to throw a butterfly in there. That's going to really give everybody a panic attack. Doing backstroke, it essentially reverses the motions that we're doing in freestyle. It is a chest opener. But, for those that cannot do backstroke, there are a lot of other options. And I encourage people, yoga practice, I'm always going to talk about it. But, doing upward facing dog, doing camel, a lot of those open up the chest. And even if you don't know those, I tell my athletes at least 3 times a week to take that foam roller, lay on your back, align that foam roller vertically down your spine, and just let your arms open up. You can do this watching TV. You don't need to hold it for 20 minutes. You might freeze like that. Or just standing in a door frame with cactus arms and putting pressure against your hands. That will open up your chest. All of those things help to reinforce better posture, bring the shoulders back, and alleviate some of those painful areas that we get from holding those positions so much in training.
I love that suggestion of the vertical foam roller. I like to do that on an exercise ball as well. Just lay on the exercise ball and just let your, it feels so magnificent.
I'm with you there, Vanessa. That's what I do too. It feels so good. I just wanted to jump in here and say as well, because my coach says like backstroke is physical therapy for the shoulders, and she will include it in almost all of my warm up and cool down segments for a swim set. The other thing, and I love that you mentioned this, Joe, it's not just like swimming that is putting us in this kind of forward rolled position and may impact the shoulders, but a lot of the other things that we're doing on a daily basis, not only in sport, but even just like hunched over our computers, looking at our phones on a daily basis. And so things that promote overall shoulder health and mobility are super important. Looking ahead at some of the questions, it looks like we might get into mobility a little bit more. So I won't, you know, go on a 5-minute rant about why we should all be doing that. But I will say that swimming all 4 strokes can actually be a really good thing to promote overall shoulder health. I mean, swimming is a very low impact exercise, so it actually will put less stress and strain on the shoulders compared to other activities such as like heavy weightlifting. And so by swimming all 4 of these different swim strokes, you also are engaging and utilizing muscle groups in different ways, which will help strengthen and develop kind of that wide range of muscles around the shoulder as well. So, you know, swimming different strokes is a wonderful thing. I think that as triathletes, we get really stuck in freestyle. But I mean, you talk to anybody that has been in a swim program for a number of years, and they do all 4 strokes for a variety of reasons, even if they are only racing 1 stroke. And that would be something good for us in the triathlon community to incorporate as well.
Moving along to question 2 from Caleb Spreider. Our devices track all sorts of metrics: stride length, left-right balance, ground contact time, stroke rate. Which ones should we monitor that would indicate red flags in our form, efficiency, etc.? Ryan, let's go to you for this one. Which metrics are most important for us to pay attention to?
Great question from Caleb there. There are a ton of metrics. We have, you know, again, from our Garmin devices or any of our devices, you can get a ton of these that he just mentioned. Plus, you know, even having a stride power meter, you can get additional ones that are very valuable. And it certainly can confuse many, many athletes. And so really, I do want to narrow this down because, you know, I could say, yes, all of them, of course, you know, we should flag them all, but no. You know, I'm going to break it down into disciplines here, starting with the swimming. You know, stroke rate in swimming is a great metric, definitely a great metric to look at. There is a ton of research that supports stroke rates from 40 to 65 per minute per, you know, for the average age grouper. You know, I say, keep that in mind. That's the average age grouper. And basically that's about 1 to 1.5 seconds per stroke. You can safely say anything below 40 is not going to be very efficient. but depending on the intent of the speed, you know, for example, if you're sprinting, your stroke rate will go higher, but and can definitely exceed, you know, 65 strokes per minute. Now, moving into the biking, this, where you can get a ton of metrics here, and this is the fun part. If you have dual-sided power pedals, this is very, very useful. Looking at that left-right balance, as Caleb mentioned, along with the platform center offset, the PICO is what you see there. It's not PICO like as in you would have in Texas with your chips. It is platform center offset. These are great metrics to look at, and seeing a large discrepancy, especially in that left-right balance, like a +/-2, that should be raising flags. As you, as an athlete, as a coach, you should be looking at that and saying, hey, okay, we've got this huge imbalance. What is going on right now? Is there a lack of mobility work that hasn't been done, lack of strength, et cetera? You know, mobility in the ankles, the knees, the hips, those kinds of things can certainly be a little bit revealed here with those left-right balances. And so truthfully, you know, doing that strength work, that mobility, and keeping consistent in that is definitely going to promote valuable changes for your athletes. Now, talking about that platform center offset in your pedals being off could indicate a need for a bike fit, for example. If you've never had a bike fit before, you need to go get one. because that platform offset has to do with your cleat placement. How the cleat is even angled in the on your shoe can certainly affect that, and then also affect, you know, really your efficiency and your pedal strokes. So those are some good ones to look at on the bike. Now, again, I head right back into mobility and strength work to even address that as well. And then moving into the run, that is another left-right balance. Looking at that, is there something off? And again, a good gauge is plus or minus 2. It is cause for concern, and it should be addressed in the same fashion as I mentioned about the bike. Cadence is great as well. You know, trying to keep in running, keeping that cadence 170 to 180 range is a pretty safe range for most people. And in general is a good place and will oftentimes help improve what many see and look at in their Garmin metrics are ground contact time. They see that GCT or that vertical oscillation. So cadence will definitely improve those metrics, that ground contact time and that vertical oscillation. So think of it this way, ground contact time, time on the ground. That's where you're doing work. That's where the most work is happening. When your both feet are in the air, you're not doing much work versus vertical movement. That's the up and down. Which direction are you trying to go? I like to say that statement. You're trying to go forward, not upwards. So those things you can look at and very helpful metrics, again, as an athlete and coach to look at.
I think you've done a very good job of covering those as quickly as possible. There's a lot to unpack there. So yeah, thanks for doing that. Question 3 is something that we all need to pay attention to mostly. And it comes from Lindsay Ann. Now, Lindsay asks, what are some tips and tricks for washing our beloved gear, especially because it can get funky? Bike shoes, run shoes, goggles, bike gloves, tri bags, bento boxes, aero helmets, all of it can get pretty gross if we don't take care of it. So, EJ, what do you think for this one? You're the queen of cleanliness, so I think you need to start off.
You know, I'm glad you clarified there, because I'm like, man, should I be offended that you're, you know, putting this question over to me? Like, or, you know, is this a compliment? I'm
it's
taking
a compliment.
It. Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
I think Vanessa asking you, EJ, is probably the best, because I'd have the shortest answer, like, huh, what? I don't know. Anyways.
All right. Well, I do. I do have a lot of tips here. So first thing I would say, go buy yourself some 2 Toms stink-free spray and 2 Toms detergent. It is fantastic. Like, seriously, guys, this is great stuff. So yeah, a couple tips with using that, like spray your bike and your run shoes after you use them, wash the bike gloves in the detergent. Those are great things just to get us started. But a couple other tips that I employ on a regular basis would include, I mean, first thing is rotating your running shoes. I mean, if you are using the same pair of running shoes day in, day out, they probably are not fully dry by the next time you go to use them for that session. And so if they're not fully dried, like, you are just kind of accumulating the opportunity for more bacteria to grow there. And so by rotating your shoes, you're not only going to prolong the life of those running shoes in terms of like the cushioning and the support they provide, but also your spouse probably won't get to the point where they're like, hey, those just need to go in the trash because they smell so bad. And then along the lines of running shoes, drying your shoes out in the sun as that's available as well. After a particularly sweaty run session, I will rinse my shoes in water, oftentimes just outside with the hose. I'll spray it with the 2 Toms stink-free spray, and then I will place them outdoors. And the reason that I do this is because sunlight is a natural disinfectant. And so the sunlight will help kill any remaining bacteria, and that bacteria is what will cause the bad odor in the shoes as well. And then just to make them smell even a little bit more lovely, I'll put a dryer sheet in my shoes, do that with my cycling shoes, with my running shoes in between uses as well. For the tri bag, I think the biggest thing here is clean it out regularly. I mean, as you're listening here, just ask yourself, when is the last time you literally took everything out of your tri bag and cleaned it out? And I think the answer would gross most of us out. Probably, you know, back to like the nastiness and the warm-up question there. We probably don't want to know the answer for many of you on the last time you actually cleaned that out. But do that regularly. I mean, really, like once a week, take everything out. Depending on what material your bag is, some of them can be washed in the washing machine. I just use like a Clorox wipe and wipe out the inside of my bag. Sometimes I'll just put it in the tub with some of the Two Toms detergent and then just rinse it out after that. But just making sure that you don't have clothes that are still in there, food crumbs that are in there from all of our like nutrition and snacks, that's really going to help keep that odor away too. The bento box. Oh man, I'm so glad that she put this on there because that is another like nasty area. Remove the bento box from the bike if you can. Now I know some of them are a little trickier and are actually like screwed onto the bike. Make sure that you have like an Allen wrench where you can take the bento box off. For my bento box, mine goes in the dishwasher. So, you know, after I'm done with a weekend ride, I will just use the Allen wrenches. I'll take the bento box off, put it in the dishwasher, make sure that it's all good and dry, and then just use the Allen wrenches to put it back on. I'm good for the next weekend ride and putting some nutrition in there. And then last couple things, like don't leave your gear in the washing machine. So this is probably one that I'm the worst about just because it gets away from me and I'm like doing too many things during the day. But once the washing cycle is complete, make sure that you're moving your gear quickly from the washing machine, like to a place to dry it if it doesn't go in the dryer or right into the dryer. Leaving it sit too long in the washing machine, even though it's been cleaned, if it still sits there too long, it can still cause bacteria to grow because it's sitting there wet. And then that leads to bad odors, which just completely disregards everything you were trying to do by putting it in the washing machine anyway. Okay, and then helmet. I rinse out my helmet after, like, I won't say every ride, but almost every ride. And then if you can take the padding out of the helmet as well, that's really where the sweat is captured. And so that's another thing that you can just, you know, put them in the sink, use some of that Two Toms detergent for. Some of the padding you are able to put in the washing machine. Most of the time I just kind of do a little hand wash in the sink. And then finally, like, store the gear properly. So whatever you've washed and dried, like, make sure it's fully dry. And then you want to store it in, like, a cool, dry place. Again, just if you keep it dry and, it's clean, that's going to be the biggest two things to help fight that growth of bacteria that causes the bad odors.
I've never felt so dirty in my entire life.
Ryan, I was thinking the same thing.
Ryan, are we like just repulsive triathletes?
Yeah, I think so, because I say I learned something. I mean, I learned a lot of things just right there, Coach EJ. I knew the ladies would come through for me here because and honestly, you just saved my precious wife. You know, she's like, oh my God, she's like, he's suddenly clean. What is going on? You know, where did he learn this? Well, I can tell her. You know, and so y'all are allowed to feel sorry for her.
I'm amazed, EJ. I'm taking notes here. I mean, I'm the worst about taking my bike shoes and dipping them into our backyard swimming pool, and my husband's like, do not do that, that's disgusting. And I'm like, well, it's chlorine, and then they'll dry out in the sun, and they're in the dryer sheets is great. That's an easy one because we're all strapped for time. So I love the idea of the Clorox wipes to have handy. When you know, if you can't do all the rest, at least you can wipe everything out, and you can, putting stuff outside to dry in the sun, is key. I do that with my kiddos' sports equipment too, which we think that our stuff gets funky. There's no way to even describe what occurs in that situation. So
I think this was basically a masterclass on cleanliness. Thank you so much for all of that. For me, when I have a particularly hard, sweaty session, I actually jump into the shower with all of my gear on and do a little pre-wash before I actually put it into the washing machine. I find that it just takes out some of the excess nastiness before putting into the washing machine.
And Vanessa, that's how we save our swimsuits too. If you shower in them and just, you know, use shower gel, soap or whatever, you know, the swimsuits really wear out fast due to chlorine and saltwater pools and open water swimming. So if you can shower in your swimsuit, you're getting two things done at once.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you can also, there's tons of protocols online for, you know, adding things into your washing machine, like borax and baking soda, vinegar. I've even heard you can add in to take some of that stink out of your workout gear. So if you just do a quick little Google search on that, you can find a whole ton of stuff. All righty, let's get to question 4 from Karen Drummond. This is the question here. I read an article about the aero effects our bottles have on the bike based on where we put them and their shape. What tips do they have to carry everything but still be conscious of aero? They test this stuff on the pros. For the average age grouper or back of the packer, does it really have much of an effect? Are we riding at speeds that make a difference?
I'll take this one here because that's a great question from Karen. And you could probably spend an entire podcast talking about it for sure. I do want to keep it fairly simple here, though, and kind of stay high level with it. And you know, we won't talk about CDA. You see that in your RaceX predictions. And what that stands for is coefficient of drag, you know, involving the wind and et cetera, and your equipment and your body, et cetera. So I'm going to leave that one kind of out of here and then really, begin with the most aerodynamic measurements made by companies is measured industry standards, 40 to 50 kilometers per hour. So I know Vanessa can appreciate that metric system right there, plug. But, you know, so what that equates to is 25 to 30 miles per hour. And you do have many options when it comes to placement of your bottles on your bikes, right? And nutrition, for that matter. Up front, in between your aero bars, there's many makers that make some pretty good aero bottles. You have that Torpedo, you have the other ones from other makers that, again, they're designed for that. And then your bottle holders inside of your frame where, you know, down the down tube or in the diagonal tube of the bike frame, you know, they're, again, still, you know, with that bike blocking half of the drag, that's going to help in there in that section. And then behind the seat, you've got, you know, options, one or two bottle holders back there you can always add to your bike setup. And those are really, really beneficial. And let me advise, too, on those that you definitely want to be practicing pulling from the back end of your bike. I've advised that many a times. It's a good practice. Even you can do it indoors on your bike trainer. Put those bottles in their places and utilize it. But I digress. I do want to go back to, you know, where do you put your nutrition? Well, you can put it, there's some built-in, these newer bikes are coming in with these built-in pockets, really nice. You can also get that bento box that you've washed and cleaned so well and reloaded it. And so you can put that right there behind the stem. And that's where you can keep some of that stuff. And again, also on your body, in your back pockets, or even any pockets on your body. But I continue forward and say, having a great bike fit for aerodynamics without, and I'm going to say that again, without sacrificing being comfortable. Because nobody wants to ride a bike uncomfortably for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. Even though they were super aerodynamic, they may get off the bike and they were uncomfortable and running is going to be really hard. So to, you know, really summarize all this, you're going to have, with a good bike fit, larger gains for the average age grouper or back of the packer by getting that good bike fit. Add in a good aero helmet, you know, start there, and then you can add those wheels later. This will continue to give you those small incremental gains. And just remember, the next time you're riding against the wind, though, I just raced recently in Waco. For those listeners out there that race that, we had about 26 or 28 miles of straight up headwind, 25 mile per hour headwind. And it was very evident, staying aero as long as I could, no matter how slow I was moving, was very beneficial. So good bike fit, staying aero will definitely help the average in back of the packer age grouper.
Let's move along to question number 5 from Sarah Barr. How should we practice terrain management on the bike while we follow our prescribed workouts? Going a little harder on the uphills ruins our NTS, yet pushing it on the downhill isn't hard enough. But increasing our power by 5 to 10% on the uphill and not coasting the downhill is a better way to race. So first of all, I just have to say that there is an entire episode called Conquering Climbs Like a Champ. I think it's episode 181. But EJ, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I feel like we get to use our standard answer here. And, you know, we had to include it at least once in this episode. And that would be, it depends. Yeah, so it really does depend. And I'll elaborate on that a little bit further. The best thing to do is to hit the workout as closely as prescribed. The second best thing to do is to look at the purpose of the workout and make sure that you're capturing the true intent of the training session, even if you are on terrain that is changing or if your intervals or, you know, the minutes spent in each particular zone isn't going to be 100% identical to the way that that training session was outlined. So a couple tips that I give to my coached athletes when we're looking at riding outdoors and still adhering to the training session as closely as prescribed is to, first thing, plan your route ahead of time. So take a look at the terrain, the elevation changes that you'll be encountering on this ride, and really kind of start to map that out. And this is going to help you mentally prepare for how you're going to execute that training session based on the intervals that you have and the terrain that you'll be facing during that ride. And then the other thing is to use your gears. I mean, just because you're going up a hill doesn't mean that you absolutely have to smash it. You can certainly put that in an easier gear, you know, increase your cadence and just kind of spin up the hill. Just because you're going uphill doesn't mean that you're going to absolutely just go anaerobic with it. Now, it certainly depends, and that's where this comes in. You know, it depends on the grade of the hill. There might be hills where you really are unable to stay within, you know, zone two, if that's where you were supposed to be in the workout, without just literally tipping over because the elevation grade is so steep. So obviously, safety first, like, let's not fall over, but let's try to adhere to the workout. One of the things that I like to do is when I'm looking ahead at the ride that I have in terms of the intervals and the terrain that I'll be on is just thinking where in the route the main set is going to be most appropriate. So for example, if I have 3x12 minutes at threshold within a ride session, that 3x12 may not be exactly, you know, like 20 minutes after the warm-up where it was prescribed in the workout. Maybe I need to, you know, get through a couple stoplights, or maybe I need to conquer some of those rolling hills and then get to a flatter section where I can do the 3x12 as adhered, you know, per the training session, so that I'm not really spiking the NTS or I'm actually meeting the NTS that I was supposed to for that session. So there's a lot of things here, and I feel like, you know, the it depends answer is still a little bit vague, but also most appropriate, because we want to try to hit those sessions. But this is the last thing that I'll say with this one. Sarah also mentioned, you know, when we're racing, it isn't, you know, necessarily appropriate to just coast down the hills. And absolutely, I agree. So one of the things that you also need to consider is, you know, where are you in proximity to your next race when you're coming into these sessions as well? Do you need to practice riding hilly terrain and really managing your effort and kind of looking at that secondary metric of what your heart rate is doing while you are on a ride like this? Yeah, sometimes the power is going to be variable, but when we're looking at managing our effort and really looking at riding efficiently, sometimes we also need to look at that secondary metric with heart rate, even if it's not going to, you know, land us in the perfect buckets for, you know, where those power zones land. It's an important skill to have as we're coming up to a race as well. So Sarah, love that you're riding outdoors. Continue to do that. There's so much benefit in learning how to, you know, change gears, manage your effort, bike handling skills, practicing your nutrition outdoors. So do the best that you can, plan your routes ahead of time, maybe adjust where those efforts are going to be. And then, yeah, keep riding efficiently to prepare for races, because that's going to get you your best split.
That was a phenomenal answer. I just have to say, I felt like, you're giving us masterclass after masterclass here, EJ. First in cleanliness and then bike riding in the hills. That was fabulous. I think we're going to go straight from climbing hills to strength training, which is another form of you know, getting those muscles firing. So let's hit this up with a strength training doubleheader, actually, for question 6 and question 7. Ronnie Meyer Calder submitted question number 6, and this is what the question is. I tend to get lots of aches and pains during training. So in the off season, I added strength training 3 times a week. But now I've upped my training even a little bit. All my old pains are still coming back, aching hips, knees, foot issues. Do you have any advice on how to keep these pains in check? What am I missing? Thanks. So Ryan, you're our CrossFit guru, so let's have you tackle this one first.
Sure. Yeah. You know what? I do love this question for Ronnie. You know, I also love hearing that triathletes are doing their strength work, and that's so important, guys. I think
we need another little like happy dance there for triathletes doing their strength work.
Absolutely. Just increasing the longevity of our lives in this sport is so, that helps a ton. I definitely emphasize mobility, flexibility, you know, so we're talking like yoga, doing the mobility work. I'm a huge lacrosse ball fan of using lacrosse balls to help with my mobility, and doing that strength work as well in combination with the training that we're doing. Our training's intense, right? It's daily. It's so involved. But you know, mobility is a means of unlocking range of motion. And I won't reveal my source who said that, but let's just say a really good man has said that before. And as triathletes, we are sagittal plane beasts. You know, we just move in a straight line forward. And so there's very little side-to-side movement in our sport. And we do limit our range of motion and strength in other planes to make us whole. And so it's important to address that. We have in our workouts, in our week to week, we have those strength sessions there. They are built for you as athletes and using our platform. And that's what I love about it. Also, I will say, Ronnie, you might want to take a look at your diet is another place that's to see perhaps, are you missing something on the macro level, on the micro level? You know, talk to a nutritionist. That might be a great place to go as well, just to, you know, cover those bases. You know, I will add, as a medical professional, I would advise to consult a sports-minded physician to do a good, you know, once-over systems check, check the oil levels in your body, those kinds of things, and make sure things are looking good there. So I've really addressed several opportunities that you can and should do as athletes, just to make sure everything is in check and that you're not, you know, not solely relying on, well, it aches and pains that are just happening because I'm not doing mobility. Well, maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a diet. Maybe it's something in the blood work. I don't know, but I just want to bring that up front as well.
Ryan, I think that's really great. And the one thing I notice, there's such a vast amount of questions I get from athletes on what strength exercises or what mobility exercises should I be doing. So if an athlete can take a little time to get evaluated by a chiro or a PT as to finding out what muscle imbalances they have, because it's so easy to look on YouTube and say, oh, I'm going to do this yoga session, or I'm going to do the everything says yoga for runners or you know, flexibility work, mobility work for runners, but it may not be the correct exercises for them. So getting the evaluation just to make sure you're not wasting a tremendous amount of time doing what you think is the correct, you know, mobility work all week long, and it's really not working on the areas that are causing those aches and pains. So I work with a chiropractor who's fantastic at, you know, after 5 minutes of being in there, she's like, oh, here, this is what's going on, you know, and it's such a relief to know that you have somebody that's, you know, working on your physical health and helping you to correct those imbalances.
You know, I think something that you mentioned here, Joe, is really important in that making sure that you're seeking the advice of some kind of professional. And I know from my own physiotherapist, he always tells me, it's okay to come into a PT or a physiotherapist when you're not experiencing pain so that they can actually assess your imbalances prior to you developing some kind of issue. So a lot of people will go as a, they'll go to these practitioners as a reactionary measure, like something is hurting, but it's actually okay to go in before something comes up for you. So yeah, thanks for mentioning that. Now, our second strength question comes from Alexandra Sterling, and it's kind of along the same lines. I'm trying to add strength training, aiming to lift heavier to offset menopause-related muscle loss. How to best incorporate this into TriDot training? Let's go to Coach Joe for this one.
Oh, there's so much here. This could be four episodes, and we've already touched on a lot of this in episodes. And I feel like we're just on the brink of understanding so much more about menopause transition and, you know, when we're in perimenopause, what does that look like for our training? You know, for myself, I did a lot of working on this over the last year or two and hired a strength coach that would highly encourage me to lift big weights. And I know Ryan's going to say that. He knows we have to, you know, at a certain age, we can't be afraid to throw around some big weights. And I was afraid to do that. I got in a bad rut of doing the same strength routine for probably 15 years that wasn't helping me and wasn't protecting me from injury and wasn't protecting my bone density. And so in working with him, shout out to Brady Hoover, who has done an incredible, strength program for me, but you know, he also is realistic in how we spend our time each week and how busy we are. So incorporating 3 to 4 shorter strength sessions that focus on, almost full body strength. But there's a big emphasis on core strength and stability. So you will work through, if you find a specialist, who'll start with you building a foundation, building that core strength, and assigning you exercises that work with your level of mobility. We often try to do exercises as women. I'm not going to say older women one time on this podcast. I'm not saying that, okay? I'm just not going to say it. But, you know, our seasoned female athletes, you know, often we do have some mobility restrictions, and even the guys I coach will have some mobility restrictions. Having someone look at you while you try to do these exercises, I mean, Brady, it was laughable. I'm in my office and he's like, I want you to do this squat. And he literally laughed out loud. And I was like, that's not funny to laugh at me. But it showed that if I'm not able to do it correctly, I'm not going to get the benefit of the exercise. And so he had me work and build a foundation where I could then squat properly or do a correct push-up, and I could increase weight. I needed those heavy weight. I needed that, you know, more loaded exercises. And in doing that, I'm going to reach all these benefits that women that are going through menopause transition need to have. So I know Ryan's going to add to this, but you know, the heavier lifting helps to maintain bone density. It avoids common injuries that women often have. There's a lot of aches in knees, hips, and that'll lead to, you know, the feet injuries that we are seeing, you know, amongst, you know, I think the statistics, I don't know the numbers offhand, but I was looking at something as to even female collegiate athletes are, you know, 33% more likely to get ACL injuries or hip injuries than male athletes. And that runs all the way up through women, through our seasoned female athletes. So we have to be more aware, and we have to take the time to do the strength and mobility work that we need so that we can have longevity in the sport. Ryan, you gonna add on that?
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. I 100% echo what you just said. I think that is so fantastic information. And we were just at USAT Endurance Exchange this past week. And, you know, the speaker, Celine Yeager, said, lift heavy stuff. I'm just going to leave it at that. She said another word, but nonetheless, you know, she really emphasized that in the perimenopausal, menopausal, you know, life. And so, you know, she's that co-author of Roar and Next Level. So great information there that she shared with us. And Joe, absolutely fantastic there. So 100%.
It's amazing. One thing that I notice over my years of coaching, and I'm sure all three of you will agree, is often you'll have an ache or a pain and you think, oh, I need chiro treatment. I need massage. I need the Theragun. I need this. I need that. And then you'll go do a pretty tough strength session, and it's amazing that your back doesn't hurt the next day, you know? And it's often that I think we need to activate those muscles, make them work, break them down a bit, build them back up, and it starts to correct some of those areas that cause us the most trouble.
Question number 7 is from Vincent Hounsom. Are swimming zones calculated as a percent of CSS and then the same for everyone? Does TriDot look at the efficiency of a swimmer based on speed and heart rate? I really struggle to swim in zone 2. It's just too slow. I have to slow my stroke rate down, not push off the wall, and turn like turning at a buoy to stay in zone 2. My max heart rate is about 110. Zone 1 sometimes seems to add up if you're just resting in between sets, so not a problem. Joe, what do you think for this one?
The one thing I always want to emphasize is, you know, we have a lot of newer triathletes that listen to the podcast, and I want to make sure that we're always explaining what some of these terms are. There are so many metrics and so many things that as coaches and athletes we are looking at as far as our training. And when we're talking about a CSS test, we're talking about critical swim speed. And it, as coaches or athletes, we're measuring the fastest speed a swimmer can sustain over a given distance. So in TriDot, we're testing at the 400 yard or meter, and then resting a bit, and then testing at the 200. And in doing that, we capture what our fastest speed at those distances are, and we can establish our swim zones and then understand what effort, what speed we're supposed to be doing each interval at during our workouts.
As we know, yes, TriDot looks at your CSS, your critical swim speed, and it helps to determine your functional threshold power, essentially, in swim. And there are other factors that TriDot's looking at to help, you know, determine drills assigned to you in your warm-ups, your cool-downs, and sometimes the occasional in the main set. You know, to be specific, your swim form, your swim dot, your race distance, your training phase durations are all used to optimize your most beneficial swim drills, sequences, and development progressions throughout your training cycle in TriDot. And so, you know, looking at it from that perspective too, your CSS test does help determine your zones, as in all FTP tests should be performed as if racing a maximum effort. And so that's very important. I'll repeat that again. Your FTP test, your CSS test should be done at a maximal effort. In other words, if not performed properly, then your zones may be inaccurate. The CSS utilizes that 400 and 200, as Joe mentioned, to help determine that. Now, HR or heart rate is not a metric utilized for your zones in swimming because upwards of 90% of your body is actually supported by the water. And being so, it's a very low impact in comparison to biking and especially running. And I do want to put this out there, is that a little caveat to HR measurements, heart rate measurements for a wrist-based perspective. This is a Garmin, it's on their support website, it even says, while Garmin's wrist heart rate monitor technology is state of the art, there are inherent limitations with the technology that may cause some of the heart rate readings to be inaccurate, such as movements of high wrist arm activity, cold water, the fit, the skin tone, even if you had a tattoo on your wrist, that can affect those things. You know, following all of this, I would certainly recommend, you know, a swim coach, you know, perhaps, and you know, definitely recommend TriDot Pool School to help with drilling, help with form, so you can progress as a triathlete in our sport.
Awesome stuff right there. Thank you so much, Joe and Ryan, for chiming in on that one. This next question is so important, and it comes to us from Matthew Preston Heal. Matthew has asked, what are some strategies, tips, or tricks that coaches use to help encourage time-poor athletes, or let's be honest, any athlete, to get recovery into their days, weeks, and workouts?
I love this question. I think this could be a full podcast as well. And I'm going to tell you something I just did before we started recording this podcast. I try to emphasize with my athletes, that, you know, your workout game is strong, but your recovery game needs to be stronger. And we neglect it so bad. And that leads to injury. That's aches and pains, irritability, screaming at your husband, all kinds of fun stuff like that. So recovery, it's got to be very, very important. And as triathletes, we spend so much money on gear and races, and it's so expensive that we often can't afford every recovery method out there. You know, it would be fantastic to get weekly massages and chiro treatment, but that's not possible for all of us. So I do encourage my athletes to spend 10 minutes in the evening using their foam roller. It's a challenge I give them. If I say do it 7 days a week, they may get it in 4 days a week. But, you know, and I'm mentioning it here, Ryan and I, like we're on the same wavelength here, my lacrosse ball, you know, these are tools that don't cost much, they don't cost barely anything. But a good 20-minute session watching TV with your foam roller, yoga stretching, using your lacrosse ball, you'll feel like you got a massage, and you're saving money. And I can tell you, a good 20-minute yoga flow can make you feel the same way. We all watch TV or look at our phones for more than 20 minutes a day. We are all guilty of, you know, sitting on the couch and doing that. So if you can just force yourself to have that. One thing I did before we recorded this podcast, this is psycho. This is crazy. But my pool is very, very freezing outside right now. But there I am in a sweatshirt, bathing suit bottom with my laptop, you know, with legs in the pool, returning emails. So it's multitasking. Sometimes you don't want to do it, but I know how much better I'd feel. I can't, you know, I don't have the time. And sometimes, you know, you can't afford to go to cryo, you know, once a week. The other thing is accessibility. Having your yoga mat, foam roller, lacrosse ball in different locations. I carry a set in my car. And I know for busy parents out there, or if you've got, you know, lots on your schedule for the day, you may be at a sports practice or a kiddo's lesson. And I have no shame. I pull that yoga mat out, and I am, and it's so wonderful because you're successfully fulfilling two goals. You're getting some recovery in, and you're thoroughly embarrassing your children at the same time by doing downward facing dog at their football practice. So it's awesome to be able to do those two things at the same time, but, you know, don't be embarrassed of that. The other thing, I there's so much I could go into this, but here are some other cheap tricks to recovery. Most of my guy athletes don't like this, but we all have to shower every day. So, you know, soaking, you know, in Epsom salt, please. Back to cleanliness, Elizabeth, back to cleanliness.
For the record, I shower every day.
Okay? Thank you, Ryan. Ryan's like, you're welcome. You're welcome. But you know, even if you're gonna shower, the hot shower, stretching in the shower, muscles are more pliable. It's easier to get a good stretch. Soaking in Epsom salt is one I hammer this into my athletes to do this because you feel so much better after doing that. And then the little tricks of meal prep. I know Elizabeth is probably great at this, but preparing a number of dinners, healthy, nutritious, nutrient-dense meals on Sundays so that you're not stuck in the middle of the week, you know, needing to grab food that's not great for you. The last thing is the monster, like, ninja blender I have. I will prep 4 post-recovery smoothies at one time when I have the time and have those prepared. Those need to go in within 10 minutes of finishing the workout, and then the healthy meals that you've prepped before within 2 hours of a hard workout. And so, you know, it does take some, you know, planning. But if you can do those, it makes your week go so much smoother, and it makes you feel so much better recovery wise.
I love that you talked about that meal prep, Joe, because I think the reason that I do this is because when I get hungry, like, I get hungry. Yeah. And coming off the bike, like, If there is not something easy for me to grab, like, that's when I'm going to make bad choices, because I feel like I need something at that moment or nobody's going to be happy. And so, yeah, prepping that is like absolute key in my house.
This is the girl who eats, you know, puts the chicken in the salad bag. I mean, she's all about, I'm not going to even wash a dish at this point because I'm so busy. Uh-huh. But it's all about time management. And it's like, you know, it's whatever works for you. But I love that having those accessible meals on hand, like bags of salad, meat, you know, grilling a bunch of meat on Sundays, having all of that prepped. That's all part of recovery. That's part that we forget. That's all part of recovery, is getting those nutrients in post-workout.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. And that's what I was going to jump in and say, is like, my quick tips for athletes that are like, I just don't have time for, you know, all of the cryo, the massage. And it's like, sometimes, you don't. And so let's focus on what you eat, how much you sleep, and making sure that you drink water. And, you know, if you're low on time, which Matthew, you know, said that he is, and I mean, to be honest, you know, who isn't, let's focus on those basic principles of recovery that you were just really highlighting there, Joe. I mean, it's great if you can get more in than that, but what you fuel your body with and allowing it to rest is going to go a long, long way. And I mean, if you are, you know, doing everything with like cryo and massage, but you're still eating crap and you're not providing your body with good nutrients, that's probably not going to do anything in terms of recovery either, because you're not like healing your body from the inside out. So I would say, one, optimize your nutrition, fuel your body with the right nutrients. Protein-rich foods, healthy fats, complex carbohydrates, that's going to support muscle repair, replenish energy levels. Prioritize your sleep. That'd be the second thing, like getting quality sleep. And I know that that can be incredibly hard, especially for parents of younger children, or I mean, parents of children that are, you know, out later and they're waiting for them to get home. I hear that's kind of the other end of the spectrum. I don't know from experience, but I know our staff has been there. Trying to make sure that you have a good sleep routine, a comfortable sleep environment, and really prioritizing the rest. And then third thing, stay hydrated. If you are staying hydrated, that's going to help flush out the toxins, aid in muscle recovery. It's just going to make things glide within the body. And so those are really like things that everybody can be focused on. Drink enough water, eat some good food, prioritize your rest.
All amazing stuff right there. Thank you so much for the wealth of knowledge. That's been really great. We have one final question to round out our main set from Michael Bailey. And the question is, we hear a lot about periodizing your daily nutrition around training. What does this really mean? And what are some practical tips?
Ooh, I'm going to jump in on this one. Because we were just talking about like optimizing nutrition. So I feel like this kind of goes hand in hand. So periodizing your daily nutrition around training means that you are strategically planning and adjusting your diet to support your training goals, and then to maximize your performance during those workouts. And one key aspect to the periodization is timing your meals and snacks to fuel your body before, during, and after those sessions. And this really just ensures that your body has the right nutrients at the right times to power through your workouts and then aid in recovery, as we were just talking about the importance of recovery there. So here's kind of like a couple quick tips to do that on a daily basis. So one, your pre-workout nutrition. Joe was even talking about this, you know, having that prepped ahead of time, 1 to 2 hours before your training session. You want a balanced meal that contains some carbohydrates, some protein, healthy fats. And this is going to provide that sustained energy and prevent hunger during your workout. Then the second thing would be your intra-workout nutrition, or what you're having as you're doing that training session. Depending on the duration of the session and the intensity of it, you may just need something for hydration, a little bit of electrolyte replacement. But if you're doing a longer one or a more intense workout, you'll want to consider consuming carbohydrates or like a sports drink with carbohydrates during that training session to replace not only your energy stores, but the hydration as well, so that you can maintain that high level of performance. And then third thing is that post-workout nutrition. So, you know, again, this goes hand in hand with that last question. So this was like perfectly planned. Well done, Vanessa. I feel like, you know, you need to have that planned as well. So aiming to refuel with a meal or a snack that contains protein and carbohydrates, you know, within 30 minutes or so, you know, there's a little bit of variance in terms of the research for exactly what that window is. But, you know, let's prioritize getting that in very soon after you're done with the training session, because that's going to support the muscle repair and regrowth that was a little bit broken down during the session. And then again, I'm going to hammer this home, hydrate properly. Okay, proper hydration is essential. And, you know, as we're talking about periodizing, you know, the nutrition, we also need to make sure that as we are sweating during these sessions, that we're taking in adequate hydration as well. So we're not only thinking about the foods that we're consuming, but if we're losing a lot of sweat and a lot of fluid during these training sessions, that needs to be replaced too. And then I think finally is considering some supplementation. And we've had specific podcast episodes about this, some great experts on the show that talk about, you know, if you need to supplement, when you may need to supplement, what that looks like. But depending on your individual needs and goals, certain supplements may help support the training that you're doing as well. And that may change a little bit throughout the season based on, you know, the intensity, the duration. Sometimes it's even based on, you know, climate. I need to supplement vitamin D in the winter. I do not need to supplement vitamin D in the summer. So those are things where Ryan was talking earlier about connecting with a medical professional, your healthcare provider, doing some blood work, just making sure that you've got a kind of systems check on an annual basis. That would be great. And these are, you know, kind of some quick things here. Periodizing your daily nutrition really just involves being intentional and mindful about what you're eating and when you're eating so that you can meet your goals. And if you want to dig into this further, I know we just recently did an episode and Rich Soares was our guest host. Scott Tyndall from Fuelin was on it. Scott and I had a great conversation about this exact topic. So if that was, you know, a quick hit to get you going, but you want to dive in a little bit more, that was episode 223. And we spent a whole hour talking about this.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
It's cool down time, everyone, and I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. Our coach cool down tip for today comes from Ben Bernard, who holds 5 degrees, one of which is a master's in exercise physiology. Ben is a team lead of data science, statistics instructor, a reserve officer of the U.S. Public Health Service Reserve Corps, and a TriDot athlete and coach. Ben's first experience with coaching triathlon began in 2009, where he was involved with paratriathletes at a local university. Since then, he focuses on working with beginner athletes who come to triathlon from diverse sporting backgrounds. He currently lives in Keller, Texas, and claims that his most notable athletic achievement is his 2 children. Welcome to the cool down, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you.
So your children sound quite adventurous. How old are they?
So I have a 5-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter.
Okay. So you're right in the thick of the intensity.
I am so tired.
Welcome. Welcome to the parent club. Now, something that most people don't know about you is that you're an adult onset swimmer. Now, this is something that so many of our listeners can identify with. So what was your motivation to actually learn how to swim?
So I actually was, I guess, severely injured. I was in a wheelchair for a while. And so that was kind of part of that physical therapy process. It's kind of funny because it kind of led me to have a very weak kick because I started out with no kick.
Right.
So now I just naturally don't kick a lot of times when I'm swimming.
Yeah. Well, I'm very happy to see that, that you've progressed, you know, beyond this rehabilitation stage of your life. And now that you've turned that learning how to swim into a passion of yours with triathlon, that's so amazing.
I survive it.
Yeah. Yeah. So what tip do you have for us today?
So I would say my tip is to be brilliant in the basics.
Ooh.
You know, I have a story behind this. I had done a sprint triathlon a long time ago. It had rained so bad, and coming into transition, it was very slippery. And so they asked all of us not to do any kind of like flying dismounts. And that's all I had ever practiced was like flying dismounts. Like even on the trainer, I was flying off my trainer. And so now all of a sudden, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to come to a complete stop and step off my bike and get into, you know, transition and everything. Well, I never completely got off the bike and just kind of fell over.
Uh-oh.
Because I never really practiced just stepping off my bike. And, you know, you would think that's one of the first things you would ever learn how to do. But, you know, wasn't very brilliant in the basics.
Yeah. So the basics of biking, you would suggest, you know, learning how to get off your bike, clip in and clip out of your pedals very easily, that kind of thing. What would you have for the basics of swimming?
So, I mean, for swimming, I would say, you know, go to Tri-Dot pool school.
Yes.
But I mean, you know, be long, focus on your form. We want, you know, we want good position in the water. You know, you go to Tri-Dot pool school, you learn a lot about, you know, being conscious in your competencies, and then eventually you'll be unconscious in those. And so I think that's kind of the point in being brilliant in the basics, is to be competent unconsciously so that, you know, when things go wrong, you kind of fall back on what you know well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And how about for the run? What would you say is the most basic thing that you would suggest for the run?
For me, it's always been tying your shoes.
Yes, that is a very basic thing.
Man, I am horrible in transition because I don't like to go through transition very fast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm kind of like saying hey to people and walking through transition. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I fully understand that. Yeah. I think in my very first outdoor triathlon, it was like my second try. I was in transition and I was like having so much fun. And my husband was like, what are you doing? You need to get going, like hop on your bike, get going. And I was just thinking, well, this is so much fun. I just want to chat with people and I want to have a good time. And so I took a little bit longer in my transition, which is something that I probably shouldn't do.
So I've been known like in like sprint triathlons to have like 5-10 minute transition times.
Oh my goodness. That is horrible. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe one of the basics about putting the whole triathlon together is learning how to transition quickly. Yeah. Awesome. Do you have any tips for transition?
Again, be brilliant in the basics. I would also say, you know, focus on your plan, be it in and out. Unlike me, I like to chit chat and, you know, I'm like, oh, didn't get that lace quite tied right. Got to redo it. Or, you know, oh, where did I put my helmet? Oh no, my helmet dropped. Got to put it back up. Even though it's like, well, you don't need your helmet anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think that something that you said is very, very important, and that is have a plan. And that's something that I know that when I'm working with athletes, that's what we talk about during transition, is we make a plan of step one all the way to step whatever. And you go through those motions multiple times before you actually have to do it during the race, so that it becomes part of this memory process. And so, you know, when you come into the swim transition, you've already taken your goggles and your swim cap off and they're stuck in your wetsuit sleeve, and you can choose, are you going to go from head to toe, or are you going to go from toe to head? And you just get organized in this very methodical way. And I think that that is what makes, you know, something very, it's a very basic thing to do, have a plan, but it makes it easy and mindless. Just like you said, it's like this unconscious ability that you have to carry forward without having to think. And I think that's where success comes from.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the Tri-Dot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to tridot.com. and start your free trial today. Tri-Dot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.